And away we go, kicking off the fourth morning of the early show here on WWGH Radio 107 1FM. Thursday, August the 1st, first day of August. Holy moly, where has the summer gone? 34 minutes past 6 o'clock, and we have got a jam-packed morning this morning. You're not going to want to go away from this channel really all day today. Just want to give you a little insight into what's coming up for the rest of the morning. From 8 to 10 this morning, we're going to be joined live in studio by 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, to recap the last two nights of the Democratic primary presidential debates. And really, there have been two very interesting nights. We're not going to talk about that now. We'll save that for when Mary Ellen gets here a little after 8 o'clock, and she'll be on through 10. And we'll take your phone calls at 740-383-9944. And coming up next hour, we're going to be joined by one of our friends here on the station, Steve Whitaker. And he's always fun to have in and just talk about things going on in Marion and in life. So that's coming up from 7 to 8 this morning. But we're going to kick off the first hour this morning with a person who we haven't had on for a while. We're always sad about that. But she has been with us live in studio, making the trek from Columbus, Ohio on three different occasions. She is, without question, an icon in the world of Columbus news. She knew how to get the guests, the interviews, and the stories for so many years. And catching up with her is like catching up with an old friend. And getting up early this morning, 6 a.m., to do this first 25 minutes with us is another kindness of this woman that I certainly do appreciate. Always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones Carol Looper. Carol, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I think I'm hoarse. It always happens first thing in the morning, no matter how early I get up. And I'm usually up by 6:30, so the voice will come back. But I've got to congratulate you. You're back on the air with a lot of excitement.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing, and I'm sure you can relate to this. Even early in the morning, when the alarm first goes off, it's kind of, I don't want to get out of bed, it's still dark outside, but once you get behind the microphone or get out on the story, you're awake.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I did morning radio for a couple of years at WBNS radio when it was news and talk many years ago, from 1977 to 1979, and I did the morning drive show, so I was in there very, very early. And then I anchored on Channel 6 in the morning, Channel 10 in the morning. We were the first show, and we went on at 6:30 in the morning. So I have a lot of experience with early morning radio and television. But I kind of like this better in my PJs in my kitchen.
Well, you know, this is, has always, for me, been one of the great appeals of radio, is that no matter where anybody lives or what they're doing, you can have them on, different from television.
Absolutely. And I have been a guest several times on WOSU talking about the Columbus Symphony and other cultural things that I have been involved in. But now they also televise. So you used to be able to go in there without your makeup and all your getting yourself together like you do for television. But now things have changed, and there is evidence of what you look like on radio as well.
What do you make of that? Because we even have a little bit of that here. We have cameras in the studio. We don't turn them on all the time because we're not on a regular television show. But even now, there are mandates that come down every so often that you have to televise radio.
It certainly gives the audience a better look at what you're doing. In other words, radio used to allow you to imagine what people looked like. And many years ago, when radio had all of the programs, you know, The Shadow and The Lone Ranger, years ago in the 40s and the 50s, you could imagine And I think, in a way, that sort of got your brain going. But now you can see radio. You can see what people look like. And I guess in today's world, that does give you a better picture of who you're seeing, who you're hearing. And again, it's brought us into the world of the internet and of technology, and the good news is we can share each other better because we can see everything that's going on.
Your other business that you were in for so long, television, do you think television has been hurt more by the internet than radio? Certainly, I think we would say newspapers have.
Oh, well, the 24-hour news cycle means that when you get your paper, I still subscribe hard copy. I'm old-fashioned. I also read the paper online, but the ability to get the news immediately certainly is killing off the newspapers. If my paper comes at 6:30 in the morning and I sit down with breakfast and read my paper, an hour or two later, I can go online and the paper will have the newest stories. And of course, they're not in print because they've just happened. I call myself a news junkie because I'm usually tuned in to some cable news station, and of course I get the Sunday New York Times and the Morning Columbus Dispatch. But I think that the ability and I have three adult children who don't get a newspaper, who get their news online. So the ability to do that and the 24-hour news cycle has really, I think, been quite damaging. The ability to do that and to go online the Columbus Dispatch used to be a rather large physical paper, and now it's quite small. Lots more ads than I remember. Well, even television news, when I got into television in 1979, WBNS, there were no commercial sponsors of each segment. And now, if you watch local news, each segment is sponsored. The weather is often sponsored by several different sponsors at different times of the day. The commercials come in quite regularly, two or three news stories and then a commercial. It's competitive. It's competition. The TV stations, the radio stations, and the newspaper have to find some way to stay alive. And basically, it's, of course, advertising.
You know, this is one thing I have never been able to put my finger on yet. Maybe you have some insight into this. As we've just talked about, newspapers certainly have been hurt circulation-wise and delivery-wise by the internet, and I think television as well. But here we've had the birth, because of the internet, of the podcast, which is very similar to radio, basically is radio on demand, and podcasts seem to be the thing now.
I am not totally a podcast listener. I probably should be because people I know are doing them. Well, just about anybody can do a podcast. But I haven't sort of joined the podcast revolution, although I do have an app on my phone and my iPhone, obviously. I'm talking to you, by the way, on a landline, which is another rarity in today's world, but if it's something you've been used to all your life, and the vagaries of cell phone batteries, we have decided to keep our landline, at least for now. I have to get into the world of podcasts because there are fascinating people going on and more things to learn than even television, radio, newspapers, and internet sites. I have a couple of sites on my phone. I guess they're called Google Alerts, and I have put in things that I am interested in, and so as soon as something happens, becomes available, I am alerted to it. I also have never gotten rid of the of the news alerts from the accidents, shootings, all of the things that I used to cover. So I also get alerts, those kinds of alerts on my phone. But I'm not yet into podcasts. I'm assuming you are.
I do. Not as much as I would like to be. I'm in the same boat as you, but what fascinates me about them is that a lot of podcasts are not videotaped with any kind of device. They're open-ended. Some go on for 2 and 3 hours, but yet they're still popular, and for a long time the common wisdom is that the attention span would not hold that long. But podcasts have seemingly something to them that allows that.
Well, I know that it's, if I'm correct, they're unregulated. So anybody can do a podcast for any length of time. And but I know that an organization that I'm very much involved in, Columbus Metropolitan Club, where we have forums every Wednesday noon and learn so much. Yesterday's forum was human trafficking. And it was just eye-opening as to how much there is, even in Central Ohio. But Columbus Metropolitan Club now has a podcast where you can, in addition to picking up the program, the half hour, on television stations, and it's available. Yesterday's May is probably going to be available in the next day or two. It is available. And it's a half-hour podcast, and it is, so if people miss the event, they can catch up. WOSU Public Media, CTV Columbus Television, and on the website. So even organizations that want to bring people in, and we do have anywhere from 180 to 400 people on a particular Wednesday, you can't make it in. Tune in on TV or listen to the podcast. And I also have to tell you that I am a fan of my Kindle. I often said, as many people I know have said, no, I need to touch the book. I need to feel the book. But I have a Kindle, and it's wonderful because if you finish your book at 11 o'clock at night, you order it, and there it is on your Kindle in the next few minutes. So, yes, I am in this generation to a degree, Scott.
Well, it's fascinating because this has become one of the big questions in news in the modern age is, as you say, podcasts are not regulated. Most websites are not regulated. I think none of them are actually regulated. Is that affecting the news in a gigantic way, in your opinion?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anybody can say anything on a platform, on Facebook, on Instagram. I have been on Facebook since 2008, and I'm a Twitter user. I'm not doing Instagram or Snapchat or any of that, but you have to be so knowledgeable or so willing to dig for the facts, because what you see and what you read put out there by anybody is disturbing, because it's true unless you fact check, and I don't know how many people go through and fact check articles and things that people post. It's a sea of information, but it can also be a sea of misinformation. I don't like the term fake news that's thrown around, because I truly believe, as a reporter for 35-plus years, that people who are on certainly local news stations doing local news work very hard to get the facts, to get it right. Yes, there is some now ownership influence that there wasn't when I was doing news. But I think we all have to kind of scratch our heads and try very hard to make sure. Because, you know, whatever you believe about Russian influence, there certainly has been an ability to direct the news in the direction of what the person putting it on there wants you to believe. So I think we're kind of in a scary era that we have to be sure that what we are seeing and hearing is true. And I don't know that they say people with an opinion want to believe what people with the same opinion post and report. So, I think I don't know that people do due diligence. I watch MSNBC, I watch CNN, occasionally I'll tune into Fox, and their takes on the news can be very different, and a lot of times people are influenced by what they already believe or what they want to believe, and I think it's a danger in our world.
Chatting with Columbus, Ohio journalistic legend Carol Looper here for about 10 more minutes this morning. Carol, what we're talking about here, on the national level, you can kind of cross-reference the news because a lot of sites are writing about the same thing. But something last year that really puzzled me and I would say frightened me on the local level, somebody went on the internet, I think it was Facebook, posted a story locally here in town about a street paving not being finished because City Hall had ran out of money. Now, it was a total fake story. It was not true at all. The council people mentioned in the story were fake names. And I thought, well, people aren't going to believe that.
Oh.
they absolutely, City Hall was so barraged with calls that they had to release a press release to the, I hate saying legitimate, but to the traditional, maybe, media, radio, newspaper, so on and so forth, to correct this mess because it got so heavy. And on a local level, where do you go to get the real story?
Well, of course, Columbus has three major network local stations, and I watch all three, although since my friends and my TV family is Channel 6, I tend to go over that direction more often. And I can see where, perhaps, a story could be misreported, misinterpreted on all three stations. And I know when I was reporting, I checked my facts. We never reported anything without two sources. But I'm worried about how the public responds. I know that anything can be put in any story. And I wish I had the answer. I know that, did your station get calls as well?
We did, and we had to correct it not only on a news broadcast, but on some of our talk shows because it was so prevalent.
And that's the danger of being able to get stories or put stories out there on platforms that are not checked. You would hope that major networks and local television networks would fact check, would check each other. But there is and has always been, I guess, now more than ever with the competitiveness in broadcasting, get the story first, get the story fast, get the story accurately. Well, now I think fast may come first because of the competitiveness. My mantra was always get the story accurately, get the story fast, and get the story first. But I'm not sure that news today believes in that. I think there's a lot of get the story first. Although, and I'm not sure that local news is being presented by old journalists these days, by people whose careers are steeped in journalism. I think that's unfortunate.
I do want to come back to that before we run out of time here, but you know, the thing about the story in the street paving that really bothered me, I guess, was that we wouldn't have done that story because there was no story. A street was just being repaved. That's not usually something that makes a newscast. But we had to do the story, and the story became that it was misreported that the city had run out of money, which they had not. That's the thing. You know, there was no cross-reference to it because it wasn't a story. You know, streets are repaved every day.
Did anybody track down the source?
They did, and the person's defense was, of course you can't do anything about it, but the person's defense was that's satire. And I don't think that is satire.
No, I don't think that's satire either. I don't think that's satire either. That's a bold-faced, blatant, made-up lie. And, boy, I hope we can figure out how to defend against that. But people believe what they want to believe. And I guess, thank goodness there aren't more people like that perpetrator putting stories like that out all the time.
I think you're right, but I do want to spend the last 5 minutes talking about the other subject that you just touched on. It could be any market, but, you know, we live in the Columbus area. All of our local news channels here in Marion come out of Columbus. Is it more infotainment now than it used to be?
Well, I think so. I think that most TV newscasts locally that I watch always have several segments on the what's coming out of Hollywood and fun things that are recorded by people, animal, cats, even watching, and I am a fan of the people on Good Morning America. So I generally, if I'm home in the morning, and I am occasionally, will watch it from 7 to 8, where they do their news. And 8 to 8:30, there's news, there's features, there's what they call pop news. And then basically from 8:30 to 9, I'll switch over to a cable station because 8:30 to 9, they do basic entertainment. There was so much coverage yesterday of The Bachelorette that I just switched over to an all-news cable station, which was also covering The Bachelorette. There was coverage ad nauseum also of the debates, and I know you're going to get into that with Mary Ellen Withrow later, but there is a mix of news and entertainment now, and I don't think we'll ever go back. I think people want that.
What do you think has changed? Is it the viewer who has changed, which is dictating what we see, or have networks just decided that it's wrong to stick with the news all the time?
Well, they have ratings, and they're able to monitor which 15 minutes, which half hour get the most viewers, and now I'm specifically talking about television. But if they're doing hard news, as we used to call it, from 7 to 8, and that's what's getting the viewers, then that directs them where to go. If their biggest jump is 8:15 to 8:30, when they're showing things that you can buy on their website for cheap, when they're doing pop news, when they're interviewing singers of the day, then that's the direction they're going to go. I think much of what we see now is viewer-driven, because technologically, those in power can tell what people are watching.
Is this not the Jerry Springer show effect that we all hit in the late 90s, which was people went, oh, isn't that terrible that that's on the air? Well, if people weren't watching, it wouldn't be on.
Well, and that is the whole genre, shall we say, of reality television. And whatever you think of Donald Trump, he came to television through reality television. And that is apparently what the public wants. I don't watch any of those shows, I'm sorry to say. Big Brother, Jerry Springer, Maury Povich, Judge Judy. Those are all reality shows. Now, Judge Judy's been around for many years, but those shows seem to be drawing people's interest. There's a reality show on CBS now that is being promoted like crazy, Love Island, and it's on five nights a week. I haven't watched it, but they're promoting that they're bringing couples together, people together, to become couples. And it's been on, I guess, for the past week or so. Boy, that is reality television in spades. Now, the Food Network, I guess you could call reality television, but at least you're learning something. And my husband, who is a wonderful cook, enjoys the Food Network. There are so many choices now. You know, there's a golf channel, there's a tennis channel. People can tune in to what they want very specifically. And so the networks sort of have to follow along people's choices.
Absolutely. Carol, I cannot thank you enough for getting up early with us this morning. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Good to be with you, and I wish you continuing success.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Carol Looper on The Early Show this morning. Coming up next hour, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Stay tuned.
National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio at the Quicken Loans Arena, and we are joined by a conservative icon, Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis, how many conventions have you been to?
Well, I came to my first one in 1952, so you can count them up.